Good morning. So I'm going to be talking about Tori. Anyone here? Let me just grab a feeling. So data scientists, do you guys have played with Tori before? Okay. Do you guys use Jupyter Notebooks? Okay. So a few very hardcore data science, but some not. So I'm going to talk about initially just get people on the same page, and then we're going to go more incrementally into more detail. And at the end, get some of the demos where we show how Tori is used and things like that. Feel free to interrupt me with questions. I want to make sure that you guys, I'm giving the right information for you guys. So again, my name is Luciano Rezende. If you guys have questions or anything and want to contact me, all my information is available there. So feel free to email me. I also have the same apache.org address, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it. So just feel free. I've been working with open source for a very long time, particularly in Apache. I think I joined 2005, 2006. So it's been a while. I currently work for IBM. And I just want to spend a couple minutes here. Usually when you say, I work on IBM for a long time, people will say he's doing mainframe, he's doing proprietary software. It's not really like that. IBM has been doing a lot of things around open source, particularly on the Apache side. We were one of the founding partners. We had folks that were at IBM that helped there. I think our lawyers helped with working on the Apache licenses and stuff. But even for today, if you look at what we are doing, pretty much all the software that we are doing has at least one component that is open source. But it's not only that. We consume, we contribute, we participate in lots of projects, not only in Apache, but in other places. We do over 10K commits per month. From IBM employees. We also come and we talk about the projects that we are working. We connect with the community and make sure that we understand your requirements, and we work with the community to get those done. Just some of the things that we do here. So we generate, we create projects maybe that are coming from research, components that maybe are coming from actual products. The process that we do on that case is usually we just make it available in open source, put into the IBM organization, have a page on IBM code at DeveloperWorks. And work with the community to find a place where we have open governance. And examples here are various. Enterprise Gateway, Apache System ML, OpenWhisk, all projects that originated from IBM, and we went there. And Tori is also one of those that we're going to learn a little bit more details later on. We work on the community, some of the communities that are strategically to us, but not necessarily the only ones that we are working on. And we also have done a lot of internal communication or internal documentation for how to work in open source. That is also, we make that available on our website, so feel free to go there. A lot of information about licenses, how to contribute, and things like that. So all available for if you want to just learn a little bit more, or if you're a part of a company and want to use that to educate your colleagues and how to work in open source. The group that I work on is called CODE, which is Center for Open Source Data and AI Technologies. It's a group, if folks have been following some of the works that we have done before, it used to be called the Spark Technology Center. We were doing a lot of things with Spark and the analytics ecosystem. We started increasing our scope and doing more AI things. And that's the name change, and we now work with TensorFlow, a lot of things around Jupyter, a lot of things around Spark still. So let's just have a very quick introduction here of what is Notebook before we go and talk about the kernel, which is one of the parts that is on the Notebook. So Jupyter Notebooks is an interactive development environment where you can start combining not only code, but you can have like documentation, you can start having kind of like a markdowns, you can get the data that you processed and start having visualization and really like a very interactive mode where you submit kind of like a piece of code, you get back something and you can start playing with that. You can document, for example, the algorithm that you are doing, and things like that. So it's a very powerful kind of like environment, and it has been very adopted by like data scientists, AI engineers, and you name it. It's very a lot of those folks that's what they do. That's what they use for kind of like building their models like day to day. But what makes kind of like Jupyter Notebook so powerful? Couple things. It's simple to use, but very powerful. I mean, you can just kind of like go to a URL, get the notebook, you get the environment. You don't have to start installing anything. You just kind of like right away start programming, start building, and working on your algorithm. It's interactive widgets. So basically, everything that you do there, we have like paragraphs. Those paragraphs, then you can kind of like execute in a specific order, in different orders. If you are working on a specific part of your code that basically, let's say, manipulates data or visualizes the data, you can interact in that like many times, while maybe the previous paragraph that loads the data for and takes maybe like a minute or two, you don't have to kind of like do that every time. Language becomes a language of choice. I mean, we're going to be talking about Tori, we're going to be talking about Scala here, but really it provides a very good abstraction, what we call kernels, that allows you to basically, if you want to do Python, if you want to do R, and you name it, is very easy to just switch from one language to another and basically do the things that you need to do on the script language or on the language that you feel comfortable. If you're doing analytics, a lot of like integration with big data platforms such as Spark kind of like comes kind of like available very easily for you. If you're, for example, using Tori, you can connect with the Scala APIs very easily. If you have, for example, you're doing Python and you're using IPython, it's very easy to get kind of like the environment available. And a lot of like tools around that also give you all of that available as well. And then once you're done, to a certain extent, it's very easy to start sharing. It's like a one notebook, to a certain extent, self-contained. You might have to figure out the data aspects of it, but otherwise, everything is there. You can email, you can zip, share with friends, share with colleagues to kind of like take a look, and then they can kind of start collaborating with you on that. In terms of like UI and like the notebooks, I think a lot of the folks that have been using notebooks in the past is using what we're calling kind of like the classic notebook. The classic notebook is kind of like a one-page application that gives you access to kind of like the different functionality that is there. So you have a file browser where you can kind of like look into like where your notebook is, and you have like a very simple like text editor console that you can use there. The easiest way to kind of like have available, I mean, you can pip install, but if you're using Anaconda, it's always there, always available. You can easily just start that with kind of like a Jupyter Notebook. Okay, the next UI, kind of like the next generation UI that is being developed and just got released probably a month or two ago. The 1.0 release, and that was kind of like at SciPy, is called Jupyter Lab. Jupyter Lab goes more kind of like in an IDE mode and starts enabling you to, it's an IDE kind of like environment, and it also provides you a lot more flexibility and extensibility. So if we look into kind of like the UI, so you start having things like a file browser. You have like widgets that provide output. So like if you have a JSON file, a CSV, you will not kind of like, you have the option to see them as CSV for editing and stuff, but you also have the option to kind of like have a visual representation of that file. So you get tables and things like that. You have like the ability to have terminals and other notebooks and other documents kind of like in tabs. And you can you can display those tabs in organize it that it makes you more productive. So you can have like a 2-3 tabs, like things on the bottom where you can compare and look into both, or you can look at the data on the bottom and actually do the code there. Things like text editor and you name it. Kind of like now that you guys kind of like familiar with what is a notebook, let's take a look a little bit internally how it works. So when we see a notebook, basically you're seeing that in a browser window that's being served by what we call the notebook server. And then the kernels are actually what abstracts kind of like the language that you are using, and it's kind of like what executes all the code. So every time you start a notebook, there is an associated kernel with that, so a one-on-one relationship there. And all the resources, everything that you really kind of like using to for processing your algorithm or you name it, is kind of like a handle and consumed by the kernel in itself. The kernel communicates with kind of like the UI, and all the kernel communications is using the Jupyter messaging protocol. What it does is it starts 5 kind of like a web sockets and uses those to kind of like send messages back and forth. You can see kind of like on the side there the different sockets that are available. So we have heartbeat for kind of like making sure things are alive, controls for like interrupting, shooting down kernels and things like that. And then you have shell, IO poop, and SDN to kind of like communicate, send messages back and forth, parameters that needs to be kind of like sent to the kernel, and then the kernel uses those as well to send response back to kind of like the UI. The UI or the client side, because there is programmatic ways of using where you might not necessarily have a UI involved. So here is kind of like just a very quick kind of like a back and forth of like how things would work. The main thing I wanted to show here are the way that things are sent back in terms of like to the client. There are two types of messages, results when you're kind of like just doing a computation. So like 1 + 1, you will get like a 2 as a response. Or if, for example, you're actually having kind of like displaying, let's say a data frame and things like that kind of like might span in multiple chunks, and those kind of like come back as a streaming. So in this sense, you kind of like send an evaluate request. The kernel then starts change its status to busy, and kind of like, okay, the message is okay, let me process that. Depending on what computation you send, you either get a result back or a stream content. And then once you get the message that you're idle, you pretty much have all your response, and there is a second message can start being sent back to the kernel. Any questions so far? Okay, so let's start talking more concrete about Apache Tori. So what really is Apache Tori? So it's a Scala-based Jupyter kernel, enables Jupyter notebooks to execute Scala and connect to Apache Spark, and enables you to start building interactive applications. A little bit of the history. As I mentioned, these are actually originated from some colleagues at IBM around the end of 2014. So it's not so new, but it has been there for a while. Around middle of 2015, we joined Developer Works Open. So the kind of like where we go, a landing page at IBM to kind of like get more start building a community around that. And then at the end of the 2015, we started incubating at Apache. It took a little bit of time to get us there, because like I think during the starting process, we were having problems with getting the right name that wasn't taken yet. So it was it's complicated naming science, but we got there. So and that's how kind of like we came up with Apache Tori, which end up being kind of like a misspelling of Tori, as in Japanese, kind of like for the portal, the gateway. For people that are using Apache Spark, that want to use Story and connect to Apache Spark, the release 0.1 is kind of like the one that supports the Spark 1.6. I think a lot of people have moved on from that, but some of the maybe folks that needs to have like a big applications that needs to be still running on top of 1.6, you will have to use the 1.x. For the 2x, the Spark 2x, then we have the 0.2 and newer releases that are available for that. We are currently on the 0.3. Installing Apache Tori is very simple. There is basically two things that you need to do. Pip install Tori will actually get the binaries and get all the dependencies that you need in your system. Configuring the Tori kernel, then you can just run, for example, jup Tori install and pass some of the configuration. Mostly you need the main thing you need is to tell where Spark home is. What this step is going to generate is to create a kernel spec. A kernel spec, we'll see a little bit later on. It's a JSON file that configures how the kernel starts, how the kernels communicate, or in this case, communicates with Spark and things like that. A simple example here. Not sure if you guys can see, but I'm going to be sharing the presentation and it takes as a reference. But you can see things here. So like this is the basic generated kernel spec. It tells kind of like where Spark home is. It has some information of like Python path and things like that probably not necessary anymore. And then it tells, let me see here, how you're going to receive like the profile with the connection information and things like that. This is kind of like a very simple one, but it's customizable. You can start doing a lot more information there. You can start, for example, passing Spark opt, so like how many executors and any configuration that you need to pass to Spark can be configured there in terms of sizes. In this case, we have a couple more Spark information. We're telling kind of like what to run when we start that. So you can basically do a lot of things. It's a very flexible way to customize all the connectivity, all the parameters that gets passed to the kernel and things like that. And in this case, like this is the run.sh that actually starts and submit Tori. Tori will run as a Spark application, and you can see here that at the end, what it's doing is doing a Spark submit, so that it will run kind of like in the Spark environment. So how things look like, kind of like in an architecture diagram. In this case, what we can see here is Tori running as a client mode. So when you start a Jupyter Lab, for example, or when you start an application, it will connect it to Tori. When it's starting that, it will submit basically the application to the Spark cluster, and then you have the at some point the Spark contest created. We have a couple modes for starting that, and then executors and everything kind of like allocated, and you start using the Spark resources for that. The problem here is that by default, and that's the way kind of like Jupyter Lab or Jupyter in general works, it will requires you to do a client mode. And the problem with that is you can kind of like get into limitation of like a resources, even though you have a lot of like nodes and other resources on Spark for doing kind of like large computation. Running in client mode, the driver will be running on your laptop or whatever machine you are, and you're kind of like constrained to the resources that are available in that machine. So kind of like you don't scale. If you want to start kind of like building some analytics platform and start getting more than one data scientist to kind of start sharing that cluster is very hard. So to that extent, there is a component from the Jupyter ecosystem that helps a little bit with that. It's kind of like called Jupyter Enterprise Gateway. When you apply Jupyter Enterprise Gateway, we have made we enabled the kernels to actually kind of like run remotely. That allows you to kind of like specify and run the kernel in kind of cluster mode and use all the resources that are available on all the nodes. In this case, then, for example, if someone comes, like Bob, requests a notebook, it will start the kernel, the WASC Enterprise Gateway to start the kernel, and then it becomes kind of like a running on yarn cluster mode, and you have like a container there where the kernel and the driver is, and then you have the executors. A couple of things that Enterprise Gateway does is also like enables like better security and user impersonation, so you also get the benefit that Bob requesting the notebook, then the kernel that is running on Yarn is actually running as Bob's user, and then you get, for example, all the ACL, everything that you have configured in your cluster, like HDFS and things like that. It will run under Bob's permission, and it will enforce all the security there. Let's take a look at some of the add-ons that are available. So one of the things that we see that we usually wanted to use are visualizations. There is kind of like a Brunel that works for Apache Tori, gives you a lot of like visualizations available there. It's very easy to you can install that from kind of like doing a pip install from the cell, and then it's very easy to start kind of like getting data frames and data that are coming from Spark and having visualizations there. Also, Tori comes with a lot of like magics. Magics are kind of like a little things that you can do, like with a percentage, something, a command, for example, which we call magic, and enables you to kind of like a macro type of thing. So in this case, we can run a SQL there. So basically saying, okay, this is a SQL. It will do everything that needs to be done to run that SQL and display the results. You have things like a data frame magic that will then display a little bit more, kind of like in a tabular, a better display there. So that you start don't have to do those things in code. If you want to connect with Tori and start building applications that leverage some of these capabilities, there are also some APIs that are available. If you want to use Scala, there is kind of like a Tori client API that comes together with Tori and starts enabling you to basically do the connection with the sockets and start evaluating code. So that allows you to build applications that actually can at some points, like for example, run jobs on Spark and get those results and move on with that. Here is kind of like a quick example, mostly directional, to how to use that. There is a link on the side there where it gives you the full kind of like Scala code to use that. But you basically kind of like get the configuration from a JSON, which will have the connection information on how you like ports, for example, that you need to do. You start the client. And then you start submitting. In this case, I'm submitting kind of like just a simple like 1+1. And then you look for what type of results you're getting back here. In this case, most likely we just get like a result. You can display like the result there or do something with that. And then you'll have like the success. If you're doing Python, there is the Jupyter client that enables you and to do kind of like all the communication. It is actually the same kind of like code that Jupyter uses to communicate with kernels. The problem here, it's probably a little bit more lower level, and you need to be a little bit more familiar with some of the kind of like the messaging format and how messaging goes back and forth. But here is an example, and you can see here that, I mean, although like you do the connection very similar, you start to kind of like playing with the message, trying to see kind of like what type of message data you're getting and things like that is really like much more low level. I mentioned the gateway, the enterprise gateway. We did a kind of like gateway client there. It's a much more high level client. It's also for Python. And you can see here, you get a much more kind of like clean user interface where you kind of like instantiate a gateway client. You tell which kernel specs, so the configuration for the kernel that you want to start. It communicates with the gateway to start the kernel. You can then start executing code. And once you're done, you just tell, okay, shut down my kernel, and that's it. So very, very simple, depending on the way you are, but you also can do very complex things and have access to all the kind of like low-level APIs if required. So I think it's mostly around the slides. Let me play, and let's see if... Hopefully everything on my Wi-Fi is still working and we can see some demos here. Okay. So folks for that are not so familiar, this is kind of like the JupyterLab interface. Let me just go here. So I have my Tori. So if you just want to start and create like a new notebook, these are kind of like a representation of the kernel specs that I mentioned. So you basically can double click here. It will create a new notebook, and in parallel, it's starting a kernel kind of like on the back end. So I'm not gonna use this one. Okay, let me just make sure. So you can come here, you'll see kind of the running sessions. So you can shut down those when you don't need it anymore. Let's take a look here and look into, for example, this. So this is kind of like just a simple example that connects, reads a remote file, and then kind of like into data frames and display that. So you see here the Tori kernel that I'm using. It's kind of like ready to use. When we kind of like start using Spark, this is what we call delayed context initialization. It will start just when you need it. That enables you to get kind of like a better user experience in terms of like start up and start using the notebook. And in this case, I'm just like starting executing. You can see here, it basically getting the information. Now it's actually kind of like reading from an S3, a CSV file, and displaying some of the results here. And then I start just playing a little bit with kind of like just display the head. It's basically Spark APIs, and then start playing with the magics here. So like having a better display of the data frame. So instead of like having this text visualization that you saw on the top here, then you start having a kind of like more HTML based. I can basically also start kind of like having parameterized tables and things like that, where you start being able to define variables and then with the SQL magic execute that query with those parameters. So this is one example. Let's take a look at different ones. Playing more with magics. Let me shut down this. Okay, just get it run before. And mostly I'm shutting down just because kind of like it's all running in the context of my laptop. So I just want to make sure there is enough resources. Usually when you kind of like running on a cluster and things like that, you don't have to kind of like shut down the notebook on every time you open a new one. You can have multiple ones open and executed in parallel. These ones, and you start seeing here, I kind of like starting documenting like all the magics that are available. This is a very nice capability from the notebooks. And I can start then playing with the actual magics. LS Magic will tell me kind of like what is available. Truncation, it's a magic that if you have like very large values coming back, maybe you don't want it to kind of like display all of those, so you can use that. So let's see an example here. So with truncation, you if you have like in this case 1 to 200, it kind of like truncates in the kind of like 170, and but if you kind of like turn that off, you'll get all the values there. The problem sometimes these can be very large, and then can take a long time to kind of like load, save, and everything with the notebook. So you might not want to have that on the UI. Okay, show types is also kind of like a flag that turn on and off, like if you want to see the actual types of the variables and things like that. So in this case, I'm here just saying hello types, and I will just say hello types. If I actually turn it on, then when you do things, you will see that, okay, it's a string type, it's an integer and string. Sometimes that might be useful. We have magics to handle dependencies. So if you want to add a jar to kind of like your runtime, you can just do an add jar. It will do the download, put on the kind of like a proper location, add to the class path. And this is usually how you, for example, can install things such as the visualization that we saw, like Brunel and other dependencies that you might need. And this allows you to do at runtime. If you have things that are a little bit more complex than just the one jar, you have the ability to do, for example, the add depths. Okay, so like I'm still in the jar here, so we added the jar, and then we start executing that, basically, I'm just asking for the version you get here. Add depths allows you to specify kind of like a Maven type of like a ID for the dependency that you want to add. It will go grab that from Maven and put into your class path. The benefit there is not just that dependency. If you have transient dependencies, you get all of that available. Okay, so like just play a little bit here. Usually also like when you don't pass any parameter or stuff for the magics, you actually get kind of like a documentation of like what is available. So that is helpful if you're just trying to figure out what to do with those. And then this case, just adding like Yoda and then using that to kind of like do things. Other kind of like more cell magics, we saw some of these like for the data frame. So you get kind of like a better representation of that. Let me go see what else here. Data frames. Yeah, you can pass parameters, so like a limit. I only want a 3. And you can also start just kind of like having directly HTML if you want to make things more kind of like beautiful, bring things from external resources into your notebook. And you can also have like JavaScript. So in this case, just kind of like doing a JavaScript cell where I say like, okay, alert here. Spark SQL integration, all those magics available. So the magics that are coming kind of like from Tori, like out of the box, are kind of like very powerful and can give you a lot of like additional functionality without having to kind of like spend a lot of like coding to get some of those available for you. Okay, that is about it in terms of magic. I think the other scenario that I have, let me see here. The Spark intro, I think we look into the bank scenario. It gives a lot of like information. But mostly putting some of this here for kind of like reference. I noticed some of you guys are kind of like new to the whole area of like the notebook, data science, and Spark. Let me go back to slides. Okay, so my main goal here, other than kind of like just giving you guys kind of like an introduction and understanding and give you information about like what is Tori, is kind of like we are an open source project. We are looking for contributors. We have a couple of members of the PPMC on the crowd. If you want to talk to us or kind of like come and help the community, if you want to start using at least and then see like problem enhancement and stuff and work with us to get those. If you are eager to get started, some of the things that I have in mind but haven't been able to get into it yet. So maybe a couple items are a little bit bigger, some others are not so big. But like decouple kind of like the Scala kernel from Spark, so you can have like a very plain vanilla, quick to start and very lightweight Scala kernel. But if you need then all the connectivity with Spark, kind of like have the dependencies and everything get into there. work on enhanced startup performance. I have done a few prototypes around that. I have a couple of branches with suggestions. We just need to kind of like have a little bit more testing, maybe build on top of that to help on the startup. I think if we, the main thing here is if we compare with kind of like the Python, which is out of a JVM, compared to Tori, which is in a JVM, it's a little bit more like 3 to 5 seconds to go more like 10 to 12 seconds type of like a start. And if you start the context altogether, it's a little bit more. So it's just a little bit heavier than we want it sometimes. Usually people will not have problems if you're just doing it on your laptop. Usually when you kind of like in a more shared environment, it's when it started becoming a little bit problem. Evaluate like better kind of like async parallelism frameworks that we can use that are kind of like not so heavy and can get us kind of like better results, better kind of like performance in general. And a couple of user kind of like UI enhancements where we see in some projects that they have the ability to see like the progress bar of Spark jobs. Would be very good to have that type of integration available in Tori so that you start seeing like jobs that are being executed, like how far they are in terms of progressing. If you are interested, then kind of like a resources for you. So toriapache.org, mailing list for kind of like talking to us, reaching out to us, our source code in GitHub. We have a Gitter kind of like chat as well, but I'd rather get you going to the mailing list so that generates more traffic, get attention from more people, not necessarily just the ones that are on the chat at that time. So kind of like that's about it. Open for questions, anything that you guys might want to hear. Yes. So if you have the so let me step back. HDFS will just kind of like be the default. If you have the proper configuration for Kerberos available on your cluster, it shouldn't be a problem. With Enterprise Gateway, we have that available. You might need to configure the run.sh to pass kind of like the impersonation. But if you pass kind of like impersonate user X and you have that knit for that, it should have no problem. A lot of people, so in a sense, this is just a Spark application. And everybody kind of like enterprises in productions, they use with Kerberos and everything. You might just tweak a little bit configuration, such as the starting the knit and making sure you pass the impersonation on the run.sh. We have all of that pre-configured with Enterprise Gateway. If you need more details or you're having specific problems, just send me an email or send an email to the dev list. We can get you explicit exactly details on how to do that. Yes. So from inside, so if you're doing Tori, you will be doing Scala. So Scala, you will be installing jars, for example, and you can have add jars and add dApps. If you're using Gateway and you basically running, let's say, IPython, you can do pip install from inside the cell as well, which is similar to the add jar. And you can install those depending on restrictions that you have. You might be able to just install, or you might have to install kind of like with dash user. So with Gateway, if you are, for example, running on a Spark cluster, it will go into one place. If you are running, for example, in containers, it depends on the exact environment that you have. But pretty much the IPython with the pip handles that for you. And the type of controls that you have is like a dash user, which is goes to kind of like a user-specific environment versus kind of like the default, which is kind of like the system kind of like environment. Usually, in more production environment, you will see availability only to go to dash user. You're welcome. More questions? Well, if no more questions, thank you. I'll be around still, and you have all my contacts to kind of like reach out to me, and I'll publish the slides and send into the dev list and as well into the my Twitter account later today. Thank you very much.